Well, a few years ago, we held a feast at Las Osas, and I had the opportunity to go out with a group of people to Hearst Castle. And it's quite an experience. You go through this castle, you drive up the hill, and it's on hundreds of acres of land. And then you go inside the facility, and you know, they show you the opulence and the beauty of this place, and you know, the magnificent rooms. And one of the areas they take you down is to this pool that they used in the movie Spartacus, and you see the little ceramic tiles with gold leaf in it, and then there's guest house to take you through, and then you go into the it's got its own theater and big rooms, you know, with pool tables in them and paintings on the wall, and in the dining room a huge long table that I can't remember exactly, something like 60 people. And I found it quite interesting that the tour guide was telling us that Mr. Hearst always sat in the middle. So he had a group on his left and a group on his right. And if you were invited there, like you sat in front of him, like if he had just invited you. And every day you moved one down the table, you know. So the expectation was when you got to the end, you left, because every place was named. It was a name for every guest. And every day you'd move down the table. So when you got to the end of the table, you know, you were expected to leave the place. And sometimes, you know, if he liked you a lot, you know, it would take a little while to go down. I found that quite interesting. You know, you don't boot your guests out. You just sort of hint strongly when they've worn out the welcome. And the whole place, I mean, he had a zoo and everything there. It was really quite something. My daughter lives in North Carolina. And in Asheville, North Carolina, there's another big mansion there called the Biltmore House. And this was used in another movie also. I mean, it's got vineyards and beautiful grounds around it. And I mean, I was quite amazed. This place was built around the beginning of the 19th century. And the architecture and you know, the way one room had big wooden beams going up and glass in there. And I said to my wife, it says, you know, it's just amazing, you know, the structure and the beauty of the woodwork in that. And this was people that were, you don't expect that type of thing, you know, from the 19th century, which only proves that, you know, God certainly put talent in people. And here again, you know, big, huge rooms and dining rooms. And when we were in England, we went through a few castles there, one of them in particular, and, you know, made out of stone and nice big rooms again. And even at where the feast is held at Chatsworth House, it's I guess it belonged to some members of the royal family. And this is a beautiful house out in the country, and there's sheep and pheasants around. And, you know, you go through the house, and here again you got these really elaborate paintings and big rooms and, you know, nice bedrooms. And I think they got something over $3 or $4 billion worth of sculpture statues and things like that in the house. And we've had the opportunity to go to France and go to the Louvre, which the Louvre is like a big museum, but that was where the kings of France, that was their home. And it's a huge complex. It's almost like a rectangular, about 3 or 4 stories. And then later on, they moved their palace to Versailles. And we took a side trip and went and saw that. And here again, I mean, the grounds and fountains and huge rooms and the bedrooms. And it was just unbelievable. And the Paris Opera House was particularly striking. I mean, the design and the marble and even the stairway going up, the way it was designed, I mean, it just unbelievable. It was, you know, you could describe it as eloquent, as opulent. It's large in size, magnificent rooms down below. I mean, things that they're hard to describe because you almost have to be there to appreciate it. And yet, these are all things built by men. And there's a lot of beautiful homes. Rich people have homes with, you know, 50 rooms and beautiful things in them. And you've got to ask yourself the question, is God going to be outdone by anything that man does? I mean, really, with everything that is built on this earth, as far as beauty, size, and that, and the answer is no. So the title of my sermon today is Home. Our home, our future home. Now, after the plan of God has been completed, in that everyone who has ever lived and who's ever been born has received an opportunity to either accept God and His laws, and with the accompanying rewards of eternal life as a full-fledged member of the God family, ruling under Christ for all eternity, or having rejected this opportunity either by neglect, by rebellion, or committing the unpardonable sin, or is not willing to submit to God, and thus having been destroyed in the lake of fire, with no more consciousness again for all eternity. Well, we know that after the earth has been totally cleansed by fire, after that, with the elements being totally dissolved, and we can read about that in the book of Peter, if you'd like to turn there with me. In the book of 2 Peter, it describes this monumental event in 2 Peter 3 and verse 10. It says, But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burnt up. So everything is totally burnt up here. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Well, of course, holy conduct and godliness are the things that really matter, aren't they? Not the physical. Looking for and hastening to the coming day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. We look for a place where righteousness dwells. As the bride of Christ, we look to living in our new home, the home which Christ has been preparing for us, and He, in a sense, is going to carry us over the threshold. And that place is the New Jerusalem, our new home. As was mentioned by Mr. Link, it was somewhat looked forward to by those in the past, and I'd just like to cover some of the scriptures he did, because they were looking forward to that. And the first scripture I'd like to turn to is Hebrews 11 and verse 16. Hebrews 11 and verse 16. It says, But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore God is not ashamed to call them their God, for He has prepared a city for them. So God and Christ have prepared a city for us. And also, if you go up to verse 14, it says, For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. They seek a new home. They were looking forward to the New Jerusalem. And Hebrews 13, a few chapters over, there's another few verses here that go into that. In Hebrews 13, and verse 14, it says, For here we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. So they were looking in the future for the New Jerusalem. Today I want to see what we can learn about our new home and where we will spend a lot of time in the future. The first thing I want to look at is its size. This is like no city on earth or anything man has had the privilege of seeing or even imagining. So let's look at the dimensions mentioned in Revelation. In Revelation 21, in verse 16, it tells us the size of the city. It says, The city is laid out as a square. Its length is as great as its breadth. And he measured the city with the reed, which is a measuring device, 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. Now, the New American Standard Bible has, And the city was laid out as a square, and its length is as great as its width. And he measured the city with the rod 1,500 miles. its length, its width, and its height are equal. What it doesn't tell us, brethren, is the shape or the form it's in. I mean, is it in the form of a cube? Or is it in the form of a pyramid? With the highest point being 1,500 miles. Or it actually could be tiered, you know, where you have sections going up and then one point is 1,500 miles. It just doesn't tell us. It's kind of hard to imagine such a structure when you think of it. You know, and actually this is going to be our future home. If you placed it along the border with Canada and the United States, and you put the northwest corner being the most western part of that city in Washington State, it would stretch as far over to Thunder Bay in Canada, which would be lined up with St. Louis in the States. It would go south all the way to the Mexican border. That would be the southern border. And the southern border would go along all the way to New Orleans. The area of the city, just the bottom floor, like, is 2,250,000 square miles. If you converted that to acres, it would be 1,440,000 plots of land. And that, here again, that's just one story. And that's just the ground floor. So this just gives you an idea of the actual capacity and, you know, its potential for the members of the God family it can accommodate. And we know that will accommodate every member of the God family in the future. And if it's over 50 billion, I don't think it'd have any problem handling that. You've got to remember it's 1,500 miles high. Just think, if it took the elevator to the top, and the fastest elevator today travels at a speed of 2,500 feet per minute, it would take you 52.8 hours to get to the top, or 2.2 days, so you better take a lunch. So obviously you're not going to use the elevator to go up there. The city is basically made of gold, which is a sign of its, you know, of its value. So there's a big sign right on the front, no chisels allowed, inside. Look at Revelation 21. And verse 18, it talks about, it says, verse 21, Revelation 21, verse 18, it says, the construction of the wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass. Now, personally, I don't understand how pure gold can look like glass, other than its reflective qualities. It says it's pure gold, but compares it to clear glass, so it's a comparison. I think gold is precious here on earth, and I think the message is that the New Jerusalem is of great value. The materials are precious, since I cannot imagine every stone, piece of furniture, chandelier made of gold. I mean, it would just not be balanced. That would not be balanced from appearance point of view, and also the foundation, which we will get to in a few moments here, is a combination of precious stones. And I think God wants us to be left with the concept that it's beautiful, and it's precious, and it's huge. And you have to wonder where the mountain was, where John was standing, where he could see a 1,500-mile city descending to earth. There had to be a huge mountain somewhere, you know, to develop that perspective. Revelation 21:10 covers this. Revelation 21:10, if you're still in the book of Revelation, it says, and he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending from God out of heaven. Descending out of heaven from God. That's why we'll have a lot of questions to ask Christ when he returns, because a lot is not revealed about the details, and, you know, which have to be filled in. So we know the city is 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles, and its height is also the same. And it's basically made out of gold, and it's beautiful, and it's precious. Now let's look at the wall around it. Before we go into the details of the wall around it, the New Jerusalem, it might be interesting to learn a little bit about the Great Wall of China, which is the largest built wall by man, or the longest built wall by man on the earth. The wall basically runs from east to west and is 5,500 miles long. Just one wall. The average height is 33 feet. And it is 15 feet wide. It has 723 beacon towers and 7,062 lookout towers. Now, lookout towers are, you know, it's for looking out to make sure that there's no enemy coming. And, of course, that's kind of self-explanatory. But beacon towers, I'll explain what beacon towers are. It's being the oldest and most effective original telegram, beacon towers are the most important component of the defensive project on the Great Wall. They are built continually to pass military messages. In ancient times, if intruders approached, soldiers on the wall would create smoke in the daytime and light at night to warn their troops. So that's what the purpose of the beacon towers was, basically pass on signals that there's an impending attack. The lookout towers, you could spot them, but how do you get the message across that great a distance? And that's how they did it. They could just send the message anywhere along the wall. You'll notice that the width is almost half of its height, or 45% of its height, on the Great Wall of China. In Revelation 21 and verse 17, it says, "And he measured its wall 140 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. The construction of the wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass." And in verse 19, "The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third, chalcedony, the fourth, emerald, the fifth, sardonyx, the sixth, sardius, the seventh, chrysolite, the eighth, beryl, the ninth, topaz, the tenth, chrysoprase, the 11th, jacinth, and the 12th, amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass." So here again, mentioning again that the streets of the city are gold. Now, 144 cubits, using 18 inches per cubit, comes out to 216 feet. It may be a little higher than that, since 18 inches is the average cubit. So I'm going by that, you know, average length of a cubit. And notice the wall itself is made out of jasper. Now, this is very helpful. Jasper, an opaque crystalline variety of quartz of varying colors, usually red, green, yellow, brown, or white. And as you can see, this is very helpful to trying to figure out exactly what the color of the wall is. I mean, it's like multiple choice. But I think it's probably going to be whatever goes good with gold, you know, as far as contrasting and variety and something aesthetically beautiful. Notice the foundations were adorned with all kinds of precious stones with different colors, hues, and depth, very similar to a rainbow in a sense. They are... And they are very similar to the garment of the high priest that he wore with the stones in it. Let's go to Exodus 28 and verse 15. In Exodus 28:15, it goes through the description of the breastplate that the high priest wore, and you'll see there's a very great similarity in the stones that he had on his breastplate and also the stones in the foundation of the wall around the New Jerusalem. In Exodus 28, beginning in verse 15, it says, "You shall make the breastplate of judgment artistically woven according to the workmanship of the ephod and make it of gold." So notice here, the breastplate's got gold in it. You know, the New Jerusalem is made out of gold, basically. Blue, purple, and scarlet. And fine woven linen you shall make it. So here again, God is very particular about the quality of the material, you know, the colors, that they don't clash, that they blend with one another. "It shall be doubled into a square, a span shall be its length, and a span shall be its breadth. And you shall put settings of stones in it, four rows of stones. The first row shall be sardis, topaz, and emerald." This is the first row. "The second row shall be turquoise, sapphire, and a diamond. The third row, adjacent, an agate, and an amethyst. And the fourth row, a beryl, onyx, and a jasper. They shall be set in gold settings." So all these stones are all set in gold settings. "And the stones shall have the names of the sons of Israel, 12 according to the names, like the engravings of a signet, each one with his own name. They shall be according to the 12 tribes." So each stone represented one of the tribes of Israel. "You shall make chains for the breastplate at the end, like braided cords of pure gold." So here again we got gold introduced in this whole variety of stones. "And you shall make two rings of gold for the breastplate, and put the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate. Then you shall put the two braided chains of gold and the two rings which are at the ends of the breastplate." This was to hold it in place. "And the other two ends of the braided chains you shall fashion to the two settings and put them on the shoulder straps of the ephod in the front." This shows that God is very particular as far as design, color choice, and quality of materials for those things which were used to worship Him. And this principle can be applied to the construction and the beauty of the New Jerusalem. Only the best quality of materials and an array of colors which accentuate the city. They don't take away from it, they accentuate. Also notice in Revelation 21 in verse 14, Revelation 21:14, it says, "Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb." So here again, just as the stones were named after the 12 tribes of Israel, the foundations were named after the apostles. There are 12 foundations with the apostles' name on it. Now it doesn't say if the names are written only in one location, for example, or if it's at each gate. So in essence, they could be written on several places around the wall. We just don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us how deep and how wide the foundations are. A cement wall 10 feet high and 10 inches thick that you could use for a foundation of a home could have the foundation part could have it could be 14 inches by a foot deep, and they usually make it bigger and wider because it's supporting the weight of the wall. So depending on the height of each foundation, this could and it would make the height greater than 216 feet. But here again, we don't know how thick each foundation is, so it's really hard to say, well, you know, how high is it? I mean, it could add another 100 feet. We just don't know. I mean, we know that it would be balanced. It'll look balanced when we look at it. The width of the wall is not stated either. It doesn't tell you how wide the wall is. If you use the Great Wall of China as a model, the width would be over 100 feet. That's if you use what's on this earth, but I'm just giving that as a comparison. And on this 100 feet, you have one lane for walking, and one for jogging on top, and one for bicycles. And one for motorized vehicles, so you know everything's really organized. And there's no mention of any lookout towers along the wall, and or if there's any stairs, if you were up there walking to go down, or elevators. It just doesn't say. There are 12 gates in the wall. Here again, it doesn't say how wide or how high the gates are. I would think that they would be fairly large to maintain a sense of continuity. and aesthetics with the wall. In other words, it's got to be balanced looking. In other words, you wouldn't normally have a wall with a huge wall with a small entrance, a little cubby hole in the bottom you almost have to crawl through. Or you don't have a 100-foot wide wall, with a 90-foot gate on it. That just doesn't look right. It just looks way out of proportion. And they're made out of a single pearl from a 10,000-pound oyster. You got that. Now you know where the story of St. Peter and the pearly gates comes from. They extrapolated that from the book of Revelation, the pearly gates made out of pearl. And one thing we don't know about the gates is it a single gate, swinging on one hinge on one side, or if it's dual, two, made out of two pearls. It doesn't tell us. And it doesn't tell us, whether it's arched, the top, or whether it's square, or whether, it's a different type of design. It just doesn't say. So, there's a lot of things that we can, think about and speculate on, but it doesn't say. It's interesting to think about the different varieties of, tops of gates. We know from other scriptures that it'll always be open. If you're still in the book of Revelation, Revelation 21 and verse 25, it says, "Its gate shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no night there." And in verse 21 and verse 12, it says, "Also she had a great and high wall and 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates and the names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of Israel." So here, the 12 tribes of Israel are written on the gates, and there's an angel at each gate stationed there. So the ephod had the 12 tribes of Israel, and so do the gates of the city. Why there's an angel there at the gates, it's just not explained. There's no one living outside, since all of God's family are in the city at this juncture, and we'll just have to wait and see the reason why. Where exactly is not stated. Revelation 21 and verse 13. It says, "And there are three gates on the four sides of the wall, three gates on the east, three gates on the north, three gates on the south, and three gates on the west." I once thought that the New Jerusalem would be placed on the North Pole. And the rationale for my thinking was that from space, it would look like the crown on a head of a person, But I was wrong. That was just my idea. I was mistaken. Only the second time in my life. The first time was when I thought I was. The reason is because from the North Pole, every direction is south. And the scripture says three on the east, north, etc. So based on that, it has to be lower on the earth. Otherwise, these terms are meaningless. In proximity to the North Pole, for someone to go in those directions when you're out of the city. So exactly where, it's not really stated. But I think it's going to be somewhere down, what we know from the North Pole. Maybe it's lined up equally with the equator. I don't really know, but I know that you couldn't say three gates to the east and go east, north, or south if you were right on the North Pole. So it has to be somewhere down. One thing we know for sure. So we have a 6,000-mile wall. That's the total perimeter of the wall. Over 216 feet made out of jasper with 12 foundations covered with precious stones with the names of the apostles written on them. And 12 pearl gates with the names of the tribes of Israel written on them. That we know for sure. How wide we don't, but I am sure it's proportionate to its height. You don't have a 10-foot wall, 1 inch is thick. It just doesn't look right. Or an ornamental wall in the front of your house that is 3 feet high, and then 10 feet wide. At a 5 mile per hour pace of walking, it would take you 50 days to walk around this city. walls. To bicycle, it would at 12 miles an hour, if you had a bicycle, it would take you 20.8 days. And to drive a motor vehicle at 60 miles an hour, not that you're going to get one out there, this is just a comparison, it would take you 4.2 days. So that just gives you sort of a mental idea of how big an area this is just to get around the city. Now, if the gates are equally distributed, there would be 300 miles from the corner, from one corner to the first gate, and 300 miles apart. So if someone said to you, I'll meet you at the gate, you better specify which gate, because there's a lot of distance in between them. Also, why have gates? I mean, it's something to think about. Why have gates when there's nothing outside there initially? I mean, you know, it's probably a little later on in God's plan that will be explained. And it says the city has no temple in it, as opposed to the current third heaven of God's throne, and there is no night there. You can read Revelation 21 and verse 22. It says, but I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And in verse 23, and the city has no need of sun or the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated the Lamb is its light. Now, there are a lot of aspects of the spiritual realm that we don't fully understand. For example, like substance. You know, we're all going to be spirit beings living in this New Jerusalem. But, you know, it's like if you go to hug another person, do you hug yourself? You know, so those things are, we just don't know. And it's evident that Christ could manifest himself in the lower levels, which he did in times past. And in the book of Genesis 18, it goes into that. So he has that capacity. In Genesis 18, Genesis 18, in the beginning of verse 1, it says, then the Lord appeared to him at the terebinth trees at Mamre, as he was sitting in the tent next to the heat of the day. This is speaking about Abraham. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them, and bowed himself to the ground, and said, my Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. So it proves that, you know, Christ, you know, prior to becoming man, angels had the capacity to look like men, where, you know, their feet even get a little dirty. And I will bring a morsel of bread and may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass by inasmuch as you have come to your servant. And they said, do as you have said. So Abraham hastened to the tent to Sarah and said, quickly, make ready three measures of meal, knead it, and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to the young man, and he hastened to prepare it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and they stood by under the tree and ate it. So it's obvious that, you know, if Christ did that when he was, you know, a spirit being, we'll also have that capacity to operate at various levels, you know, when we're spirit beings. And also in John 21, another example of that that capacity that Christ has and we will have in John 21 as residents of this New Jerusalem. In John 21, in John 21, in verse 1, it says, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and in his way he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael of Cana and of Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to him, I am going fishing. They said, we are going with him also. They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. But when the morning had come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast their net, and now they were able to draw in because of the multitude of fish. They were not able, I should say. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put out his armor garment, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea. But the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far from land, but about 200 cubits, dragging the net with fish. Then as soon as they had come to the land, they saw a fire of coals there and fish laid on it. So here, this was after Christ had been resurrected, and he had miraculously produced fish and coals. So he was able to eat. Now, the New Jerusalem is a wonderful city, and perhaps even getting some finishing touches in the decor and other fine qualities at this particular time, because Christ said, there are many mansions and I go prepare a place for you. So who knows? He could be finishing off some of the areas in that city that we'll be occupying to the taste that we like. And it's our future home for the bride of Christ, the spiritual God family in the future. We don't have all the details, but we do have enough to picture a most beautiful, a most elegant, a quality-built city and a future home for the family of God. The feast pictures the millennium and the challenges involved with bringing potential sons of God into the family of God. The New Jerusalem pictures the final fulfillment of that goal, and from there, the future in whatever God has in mind for us. And it's not all spelled out in every detail, brethren, but it sure will be exciting when we do finally get there.